Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Tom Nino here for the appellant, Diamond State. I'm here to challenge what I believe are two legal issues that the district court made in dismissing this case with prejudice when my client, as the plaintiff in the case, moved to dismiss the case without prejudice.
It's a nice, interesting, theoretical legal question. Is there some practical reason that you really care?
Yes, there is. The context of this case, as the judges, I'm sure the justices know, is it's a declaratory relief action concerning insurance coverage for an underlying sexual abuse case against a school district and its individual teachers and counselors. Many of those teachers and counselors could not be found but were sued in the underlying case and therefore were named in our case, but they did not actually enter into the settlement that resolved both lawsuits. So there is a theoretical possibility
they were sued but couldn't be found. Does that mean they weren't served?
That's correct. They were not served.
In other words, they're not going to be bound by whatever judgment we have.
That's correct.
So they're out of the case realistically.
That's correct.
Okay.
So there is the theoretical possibility, and we're hoping obviously that nothing further will happen in this case, but there is the theoretical possibility that those unserved defendants in the underlying case and in our case could come back and sue my client for some sort of monetary injury suffered in connection with the underlying lawsuit. The judgment of dismissal with prejudice in this case acts as res judicata, finding on the merits against my client on its coverage position that its policy did not cover either the school district or the individual defendants in the underlying case. Conversely, because the judgment is on the merits against my client, it's not a judgment on the merits against Genesis, another insurance company for the school district, who was a defendant in this coverage case, and therefore, actually, the nature of the judgment at this time, given its res judicata effect of my client, if there were to be any litigation, which everyone hopes there won't be, would actually be an advantage to Genesis were there to be some sort of further argument about apportionment.
Review the betting for me if you can. I understand roughly what this case is about, but what precisely is it, in your view, that was adjudicated by the dismissal on the merits? What was your client claiming and that has now been decided adversely to your client?
Well, it would be the contentions of coverage under the policy itself, which I actually did not review prior to coming here today because I was focusing on the procedural matters. But generally in these cases, I believe there is an exclusion in the policy for sexual abuse allegations against a school district. There is generally a sublimit of coverage, which is lower than the general limit, and that limit only applies to defense payments but not indemnity payments on behalf of the insured. There may also have been, some sort of an intentional acts exclusion in the policy.
And are you worried about issue preclusion?
Yes.
Well, issue preclusion requires actual litigation and decision on the merits, not merely decision on the merits. So you needn't be worried about issue preclusion.
Well, I think whether it's issue preclusion or the broader form of res judicata, my understanding of the authorities cited in our brief and another I found last night is that because it's a judgment on the merits, it goes against our client on that.
Well, yeah,
on those
issues. I understand that, but I'm trying to figure out what worries your client and what the preclusive effect on your client will be if these other people show up, whoever they are, and bring suit. I gather you want to have the issue of coverage decided in your favor, and you're worried that this settlement will be held against you in terms of issue preclusion.
Correct.
Issue preclusion requires actual litigation and decision. Settlement does not give you issue preclusion.
There was a summary judgment motion filed on my client's behalf.
Well, yeah, but then you settled.
Correct.
So
it was settled before that motion was decided.
Yeah. So I see no possibility of issue preclusion against your client coming out of a settlement.
I nonetheless would be concerned, notwithstanding that it would preclude my client as a bar to seeking contribution from Genesis, for example, in the future, again, under the possibility that either of us were to be sued by these individual defendants in the underlying case.
Is the ultimate of your argument that the court may never grant a motion at the Rule 41 level with prejudice if, in fact, the plaintiff has moved without prejudice? Is that the ultimate of your argument?
Yes, that is the ultimate of my argument.
And if that be the ultimate of your argument, then what part of the rule would you point me to that would suggest that that is the proper interpretation? Because I see a catch-all at the end of the rule, but I see nothing in the rule that would suggest that.
When the court, excuse me, when the rule says on terms that the court considers proper, which is, I assume, the clause you're referring to.
Well, I don't find anything in the language of the rule which would suggest that the court cannot act except without prejudice. I don't see any reason really in the rule to have the catch-all if that's always the case.
Well, the catch-all is there for things such as costs that might be awarded against the moving party in favor of the defendant. That the logic, I believe, behind my client's position on this is that when a plaintiff moves to dismiss without prejudice and the case is turned around and dismissed, without prejudice, and the case is dismissed with prejudice, essentially an entirely different motion there is being granted. An entirely different order is being granted. The court's not acting just on a motion to dismiss without prejudice. It's actually granting a motion to dismiss with prejudice. And that seems to be the logic of this court's comments in the Hargis case, where it commented that in that case, because the plaintiff had moved to dismiss without specifying a preference, his motion did not preclude entry of an order.
That's easily covered by Rule 41. If he doesn't say anything, there is absolutely something the court does. Unless the order states otherwise, the dismissal under the paragraph is without prejudice. So if the court never says anything about it, it's always without prejudice. And if, in fact, your client only moves without any idea of what it is, you're suggesting that's always without prejudice as well.
The comments that I was referring to in the Hargis case, actually, this court said there that because the plaintiff did not specify what he wanted, that motion did not preclude the court from entering an order dismissing with prejudice. To my mind, the only logical corollary to that is that if he had requested only dismissal without prejudice, then that would have precluded the trial court. And then on this last sentence that I believe Your Honor was referring to, in Hargis, I believe also the court said that that language is only an interpretive guide as to a silent order. It does not grant discretion. It does not address the district court's discretion in the first instance.
You're out of time, but let me just make one point clear. Judge Smith asked you whether your ultimate position was they have no authority to convert a without prejudice to a with prejudice motion. As I understand, that is your ultimate view, as the most. As I understand your position, and tell me whether this is correct, your alternate position is that if there is authority, that doing it in this case is an abuse of discretion. And we haven't really gotten to the question of what constitutes an abuse of discretion and why, assuming there is authority. Can you tell us in 1 minute why
I think so.
Okay.
I think this is the Westlands case, which says that there has to be some sort of legal prejudice that would result to prevent granting a motion to dismiss without prejudice. There was no basis for any sort of legal prejudice of the type that this court has recognized to be sufficient to deny a motion to dismiss without prejudice. All that Genesis said was it leaves things uncertain, but that court clearly stated in Westlands that that sort of legal uncertainty is not sufficient for the court to deny a motion to dismiss without prejudice.
We'll give you one more minute in rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. Wade Hanser on behalf of Genesis. Thank you for your time this morning. The question that the court asked, first shot out of the bag, why are we here, what difference does it make, is what I've been trying to find out for 2 years now.
Well, if it doesn't make any difference to you either, then I'm really puzzled.
It actually does.
All right, so it makes a difference to both sides, it turns out.
Well,
or at least that's what you think. Okay. Why do you think it makes a difference?
I think it makes a difference because we made a deal.
And did you say without prejudice in the deal? With prejudice in the deal? You made a deal to dismiss the case.
We made a deal to settle the underlying sexual molestation case.
Also to dismiss the case. Wasn't that part of your deal?
The deal that we made was to dismiss the entire case with prejudice.
Does it say?
The judge.
Hold on.
Yes.
In your settlement agreement, does it say with prejudice, without prejudice, or what?
It says neither.
It just says dismiss the case.
That was the issue that Judge Hicks, upon briefing, upon the facts, upon the argument, upon reviewing the settlement agreements, because there were more than one, concluded that the intent of the parties was that it was a dismissal with prejudice.
You mean he decided the merits of the argument on what the settlement agreement meant at the time of a motion to dismiss?
By both of his orders, by the initial order partially granting the motion to dismiss and granting the motion to dismiss with prejudice that I filed as a counter motion, and in connection with his denial of the so-called motion for a new trial, which was actually a motion for reconsideration, he concluded that the clear intent of the parties was that these settlements, plural, were to resolve all issues between all parties to put this at rest.
Well, that's something that bothered me about this, and maybe you can answer that. Do you think that at the time of a motion to dismiss, if there's a dispute about the meaning of the settlement agreement and what the intent of the parties is, that that can be resolved at the time of a motion to dismiss?
Certainly.
Okay. Is there any
It was before the court. Yeah. It was raised as to the plaintiff's contention, Diamond State's contention, that it was to be dismissed without prejudice. Our position was that the deal was it was dismissed with prejudice. The reasons that...
The agreement doesn't say either. It doesn't say dismissed with prejudice or without prejudice.
Agreement does not indicate with or without. It just says will dismiss.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go back to my question. It's... What you're describing to me is a dispute as to the meaning of a contract where it can be resolved by oral evidence or whatever kind of evidence as to what the parties intended when they entered into an agreement. Is there any authority that you're aware of either way? In a normal contract case, of course, this wouldn't be resolved at the stage of a motion to dismiss. It's a factual dispute between the parties. Do you know of any case which says that when you're determining this type of issue, the court can resolve the factual issues as to the meaning of the contract?
Not off the top of my head, Your Honor. I suspect that if the court would like me to brief that, I'm more than happy to file a supplemental brief on that issue. I think that clearly the parties presented the issue to Judge Hicks, presented the evidence. No one objected. No one challenged his jurisdiction.
When you say presented the evidence, what do you mean?
The settlement agreements.
But no, nothing beyond the agreements themselves.
No.
So no testimony from anybody as to this is what was said.
No.
This is
other than declarations of counsel.
Yeah.
And what are the declarations of counsel?
Declarations of counsel are basically my declaration that advised that I had repeatedly asked counsel for Diamond States, why is it that you are now trying to dismiss this without prejudice?
Well, but what about the meaning of the contract?
Well, the meaning of the contract was in exchange of emails, and those are part of my declaration, which are in the excerpts of record, which indicates that it was an entire settlement of the entire matter. And so that was submitted to Judge Hicks as part of the evidence before him.
It seems to me that Westland's Water District versus the United States really talks about when ruling on a motion to dismiss, the district court must determine whether the defendant will suffer some plain legal prejudice as a result of the dismissal, rather than looking at the agreements themselves. Wasn't the district court really looking at whether there was some plain legal prejudice that could result here? Wasn't that his standard that he had to look at, not try to determine what the contract said?
Yes, and he did, Your Honor. He specifically found that there was plain legal prejudice to Genesis. And if you will just step back and think about it, this is an executed settlement agreement. The underlying molestation case, the money contributed partially by Genesis, partially by Diamond States, partially by the school district, was distributed to the underlying plaintiffs, who dismissed their action with prejudice, which goes as to why the revisionist history as to the what-ifs that counsel has tried to give the court doesn't hold water. That case is done. The so-called unfound defendants...
That might be why you ought to suggest, because it has to do with plain legal prejudice rather than dealing with all what would be in the contract itself, that my good colleague, I always call him Professor Fletcher, his idea about what needs be done in these particular situations when, in fact, it does make any difference, has a lot of meaning, whether there's any plain legal prejudice.
Correct. The prejudice is simply that this agreement cannot be returned to the status quo. The status quo, it was irrevocably lost when the settlement was entered and funded, the funds distributed to the underlying plaintiffs, the young woman and her family, the woman who was molested and her family. That money was distributed to them. It was paid. It was gone. We can't unwind this. So that is the plain legal prejudice. The status quo cannot be maintained. This isn't the situation where a plaintiff, after filing the complaint and doing a little discovery, decides, oh, I forgot to add somebody, and seeks to dismiss it without prejudice in order to maintain the status quo. No one has changed their position at that point. My client has irrevocably changed its position. The other point I want to make is that the reasons that Diamond States has advanced, that is, that somehow they have this exposure by these unnamed individuals, is hogwash. Those individuals, to the extent that they were named in the underlying lawsuit brought by the young woman who was molested, that has been dismissed with prejudice. They cannot be sued, whether they're found or not. Is dismissed.
Were they ever served?
I don't believe they were ever served the underlying case, but they were dismissed. There is no claim.
Well, if they were not, this may be a side point, but if they were not served, there can't be a bar on a future suit against them if they were never served and therefore never part of this lawsuit.
The settlement agreement in the underlying case, not in the coverage case, which we're talking about, in the underlying case, that resolved all issues brought in that initial lawsuit. So plaintiff released those claims, even as to the unserved defendants.
Oh, I see.
I'm not talking about res judicata. I'm talking about the fact that the claim was released by the parents and by the girl. So, again, I've been trying for 2 years to get an explanation from Diamond State as to what it is that you want are trying to do. My client settled this case because it was a settlement once and for all. It resolved the coverage litigation that it was in the middle of, that it had spent significant money defending, only to have Diamond State say, well, yeah, it's all resolved, but, you know, maybe not. Well, the but maybe not was not what was bargained for. What was bargained for was a complete resolution. Judge Hicks did not abuse his discretion in concluding that there was prejudice to Genesis and that this dismissal with prejudice was the clear intent of the party. And I think that you have to empower a district court judge who has a case in front of him or her to make the decision as to whether or not this litigation is finally resolved once and for all.
Well, that can be done in a different way. I mean, if the plaintiff hadn't made the motion to dismiss without prejudice, and you thought the case should be disposed of, you actually had a motion to dispose of it once and for all. It was your motion for summary judgment, right?
Well, it would have been a motion to compel enforcement of the settlement.
All right.
Which is really, if you think about what the parties argued to Judge Hicks in the motion to dismiss without prejudice and my counter motion to dismiss with prejudice, was just that.
Well,
it was a motion to enforce the settlement.
All I'm saying is that your ability to dispose of this once and for all doesn't depend on the judge's converting a motion to dismiss without prejudice into a motion to dismiss with prejudice. If that were the only way to do it, you'd be right. When you said you have to have a way to dispose of this, you did have a way.
It
might have been a lot easier if the plaintiff had never made his motion.
We actually dispose of this the way the courts tell us to dispose of it. We attended a mediation in good faith. We conducted ourselves in good faith. We entered into an agreement. We lived by that agreement. We executed the agreement. We paid the money, and we tried to file the dismissals. So we have done what we're supposed to do. The court sitting, the trial courts have to have the authority when presented with these sorts of situations as to what a settlement does or does not entail, when the evidence are presented to it and it makes a decision, as long as it has not abused its discretion. And the court here clearly didn't. There's been no argument that the court abused its discretion.
There is an argument in its brief. You know, the more you talk, I'm totally sympathetic to your view of what you're entitled to. My only concern is whether it's through this procedural route. And maybe it is. I'm not saying it isn't. But it's not just for this case about when you talk about the authority of a district judge to decide to convert a motion without prejudice into a motion with prejudice. When you talk about that as an abstract legal issue, it's more than the question of whether in this case you should have a right to a final determination. Clearly you do have a right to a final determination. And saying that you did what a court told you to, I would have thought was a good answer until last year when a lawyer followed what a judge told him when he said you've got 15 days to appeal. He followed the district judge. The Supreme Court said, too bad. You shouldn't have followed the judge. Your client's lost all his rights. So we have a different duty under the law than to just answer the question of whether you did what a judge told you to do, unfortunately.
And I didn't mean to say I did what the judge told me to do. I did what the law told me to do. We did what we were supposed to do. Rule 41 allows a district judge to decide whether it's with or without prejudice, and that is really what the legal issue is for the court.
Okay.
Thank you for the extra
time.
I appreciate it.
All right, we'll give you 1 minute.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
I still don't understand why you're here, but...
Okay. Counsel made several comments. We made a deal. There was a complete resolution. Certainly the court can decide what the settlement agreement says. I think the court asked, is there any authority on that point? We did cite it on in our opening brief on page 7. That's the Smith-Klein versus Pentec case, which states that, I think, as Justice Reinhart was indicating, a Rule 41A2 motion is not the proper vehicle to enforce a settlement agreement, and in fact the merits of the agreement, as the court says in that case, are not even before the court in a Rule 41A2 motion. And also, evidentiary-wise, counsel seems to present the record as there was an almost undisputed version of events as to what happened at the mediation, as to what was, quote-unquote, intended by this settlement. Of course, the settlement agreement doesn't say that, and he also fails to notice or mention that the school district itself did not oppose dismissal without prejudice. His comments about the only... I can't remember exactly what he said about it, but the comments about undoing and we can't go back and undo, and his client would somehow face some sort of problem if we tried to go back and undo and it wouldn't have entered into this agreement, I guess is the implication in the first place, had the dismissal not been with prejudice. All of that, as far as I can tell, is speculation. I see nothing in the record on that point.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Case just argued is submitted.